the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Mirror's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 19 into the 20s, 5 weeks to go. Pointy end to discuss all things Supercoach. Got Tommy with us. G'day, Tommy.
How's it going, mate? Yeah, definitely into the pointy end. I think as we sort of come to the end, there's obviously not a whole heap going on. It's injuries. Working out who's your best cover and trying to nail these captains. So hopefully on the run home, we can get a fair few of those right and keep climbing the ranks.
Yeah, captain's big one. We'll obviously spend some time on there. And there actually is a bit of news come injury front and cover, with 5 weeks to go, where that benchmark is for a 1-2 week injury when you can potentially pull the trigger on a trade if you do have some left. But we're also going to just discuss today a few learnings from the season so far. Obviously, I know that a lot of coaches are out of trades, so give you a bit of extra content for, obviously, with no point talking all spending all our time on trade targets when people haven't got trades up their sleeve. We'll also, at the end of this, talk about a couple of learnings to take away, because I've certainly feel like I've got a better grasp on the game this year than last year, and looking forward to having a crack again next season. Before we get stuck into relevant players for this week, Tommy, as always, we'll just go through your round last week, how you're now ranked, and setting up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it was a really good round for me. I think it was a pretty good round for a lot of people across the board, although there was still some unlucky circumstances that caught a few coaches. But I scored a 26.95, which is obviously a very good score. And managed to climb 123 spots. So I'm sitting 200 even, which I'm very happy with. We've got 5 rounds to go to hopefully half that and get into the top 100, which is always, I guess, the ideal goal. Obviously, you want to win it, but that's very hard. So getting top 100 is very good. So that's where I want to get to. And then sort of, I guess, what helped me with the round was obviously a Timmy English vice captain, which was obviously very good. I think we're sort of seeing the difference between those that moved on Flynn for English that's probably hurting those. Moved on English for Flynn, which is probably hurting them, just with English being a regular vice captain option and Flynn not quite hitting the heights that he did in those first 4 weeks. So that's obviously helped. And then there was just some massive scores across the board, obviously bringing in Sicily the week before. He's repaid the faith with that massive score. He probably got a fair bit lucky in that last quarter. He probably ended up with 50 points he probably shouldn't have, given that a few of those contested intercepts were a bit dubious in terms of whether a free kick should have gone against him. But I certainly take that. And I think, I suppose, like looking at what Walsh was doing as well and then obviously getting injured, those owners were very unlucky. And I think in terms of my rank climb, obviously those coaches would have been very hard to compete against if he put up a 200, which I think he was on track for. So, yeah, pretty good week across the board. Lots of players repaid the faith. I think the only poor performer for me was really Goulden, and he's very highly owned. So not a whole lot to complain about, which is good.
So into the top 200, still one trade up your sleeve. Or was to the top 100, is that your realistic target for the coming rounds?
Yeah, it is. And I think, obviously, every team's very competitive and every team's very similar. So it's a lot of, obviously, captain's choices, a fair bit of luck or two, I think, in terms of who gets injured and who's out. Obviously, if it's a pod that I don't have, that's obviously going to help a lot. So a fair bit of luck to play out. And I guess having that one trade up my sleeve really helps if there's an injury over the next couple of weeks that I'm able to cover and some can't. So I think there's about 30% of the top 100, top 200 that don't have a trade up their sleeve. So, yeah, I think it's a very realistic target and obviously things will have to go right for me, but hopefully I can get there.
That'd be a massive accomplishment if you can go two top 10s or top 100 within 4 seasons, especially this day and age of Supercoach where it's trickier and more luck dependent with these injuries, concussion rule, subs, restings, all that sort of business, plus the extra content out there. There's so much on Twitter. Every average everyday coach typically can pick up any. It's hard to find those golden nuggets this day and age. I think that's why we like, and we've got the paywall with our membership. We've got about 100 members who listen to our content, read our trade insights, so we like to think that ours is still very unique what we dish up, but it is a very hard feat. I think top 1,000 this day and age, the top 100 of yesteryear, top 10,000 is probably the top 1,000 of yesteryear, and it goes like that. So I had also a good round, 26-21, which bumped me up from, I think I was 160-odd, and I'm now 141. Helped by my cover, and we'll talk about learnings at the end, and this concept of the 23rd man. I essentially have 24 premiums, and with last week having Darcy Cameron, Tom Green, and Dunkley out, and then the week just gone having Tom Green and Rory Laird out, I've been able to just continue to field those extra premiums, which has boosted me from outside the 200 to 140 at the moment. Obviously, my luck's going to run out soon where there's no trades. If Rory Laird misses, obviously Jordan Ridley, I'm not sure if you mentioned him along the same lines of the Sammy Walsh, but he was also injured as well. So soon I'm either going to have to cop a donut or field a rookie, but who knows? I could still dodge a few if Laird's named this week. He comes in for Ridley on my field, and those extra two premiums I have in my team means that I've got Tom Green and Ridley sitting on the bench in the meantime. So feel like I'm going okay. Obviously missed the big scores. This is the benefit of having trades, and I'm so glad. It sounds like I'm just saying it, but I'm genuine, because I was big on coaches and members getting in Sicily if he had trades. I'm actually glad he went big to repay that faith last week. But yeah, having trades gives you that flexibility. Obviously, I don't have a Sicily, and there was someone else who had, Josh Sinclair. So back-to-back seasons of watching Sinclair go 130s, but feeling all right about my team, and one top 100 might be tricky with no trades left, but trending in the right direction. So you've still
I think having a pod there in Steele's pretty handy. He's not very highly owned, and I think last week we had a bit of a laugh about chucking the C on him. Turned out he would have been a pretty good option. So I think having him there, getting back to sort of that form of old, which he's sort of showing, is going to help too as well, because he's certainly, in terms of being that sort of M8, M9, which he's sitting there for, and the reason you hung on to him, that's a pretty handy cover.
Yeah, I'm probably forced to hang on. And that's sometimes a benefit, having no trades. You don't have the luxury, so you're forced to hold players like him, like a Sheasel, who's since come good, even a Will Day. I know everyone has sliding doors in this game and who you trade in, who you trade out, but yeah, last five average of 118, Jack Steele with a trade up your sleeve might have set you looking pretty good last three, 135. Sorry to rub that into you. I didn't actually mean it.
No, that's okay. That's all right. He turned into Petrarca, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Yeah, Petrarca's just kept that dud, isn't he, for a man who's barely playing in the midfield. He might get forward status next year, the way things are going. So last week, obviously, you had one trade up your sleeve. The debate was, do you use it on getting in a Max Gawn as a bit of a pod to top end? Do you use it getting rid of an underperformer in other positions, or do you save it with Rory Laird out and rely on your cover? So obviously, I think you got, is it Sil Cunningham who you're relying on as that cover when Laird was out?
Yeah. And look, I was going to loop Angwin. I watched most of that Carlton game. I sort of went away in the last quarter and I came back and he kicked a snag and they gave him, I think it was like 18 points for it. So him putting up an 80 was certainly welcome. And I suppose Angwin's put back-to-back pretty decent scores on the board in a 75 and a 74. So I take that. I think in terms of having those options to loop, like I'm more than happy to run that cover for an extra couple of weeks and until we sort of get to the end of the season. And, you know, I think 2 to 3, depending on the player and who gets injured and what it can do for me, I think more than happy to keep running that sort of that loop as cover if Rory Laird was to miss or if we get another short-term injury. So, yeah, very happy with old Cunners.
Yeah, Angwin, you wish he had this form in the buys. And Cunners, I might take a little bit of credit for that, because I think the other option was to use two trades and get a Sheldrick potentially. Or was, you know, there was someone else cheap you could have got as cover. And who was that other player which you could have been? And I said, go down further and you got Cunningham there.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was, but he was a basement price. I think it was Cooper Harvey, actually.
Okay.
And then, just paid up a little bit for Cunners. And, he's come good and produced some decent scores as cover as we've had this carnage. So, yeah, take some credit, and I'll thank you for that one.
So my insights, and I'm acting like I'm an expert when I send these insights out about philosophies, but a lot of it I'm just using the philosophies you've done when you used to write the insights last year. And it's all about at this time of year, if a player's out for 1 week, you're better off holding, playing cover, even if it's going to cost you 50 points of fielding a rookie for 50 points instead of getting a premium for 100, 110. Knowing that if you get an injury like a Walsh or a Ridley and then you're forced to play either a donut for 4 weeks or have just rookie cover for 4 weeks, you're going to eat away that extra bit of point save pretty quickly. 5 weeks to go, is that theory still the same? If we were to get a 1 week injury, sounds like Rory Laird's close. Are you still playing cover? And when is the point where you start pulling the trigger on a 1 week injury if you've got firstly you with one trade, or if you've got two trades left, when do you start pulling the trigger with 1 week injuries?
Yeah, for me, it's 3 weeks to go, I think. So I'll try and get through this week and the next week. If there's a 1 weeker and it's a confirmed 1 weeker, I think the threshold on that sort of changes. So I think when you look at someone like Rory Laird, if that happens in 2 weeks and we're not sure if he's going to miss one or two, I think that, you know, the threshold is there to trade probably, you know, after this round, just given that the risk, if he misses two, then that was 100% a guaranteed trade. So there's, a bit of a gamble that you want to take there. And if you're thinking that he misses two, I think the trade is 100% worth it. So if, you know, if someone misses two this round, they're definitely a trade. And I think once we hit pre-lockout of round 22, that's when a one-weeker is certainly worth the trade. Because I think if you're sort of looking at fielding, like obviously a Cunningham, he's putting up 80s, but his average is a 68. You can sort of comfortably, and you'd want a 60 from him, I think, in a small forward role, depending on his matchups. I think the difference between, you know, making that trade and getting 120s out of a premium over that 60 is definitely worth it, given that a small forward and a rookie can put up a pretty, you know, really low score, get subbed, which is obviously going to really hurt that calculation of who's going to be more points. So I reckon I'll try and get through the next two, and then following that, a 1 weeker, I'll pull the trigger on basically right away, unless it is sort of someone that's, I guess, one of my lower performances. Like say it's a Will Day, who's an averaging 95 and the cover is a Cunningham who's 75, I think that's something that I'll consider. But obviously if it's a bond going 130, I reckon you pull the trigger on that because it's going to be really hard to make up.
Yep, like it. So let's run through as we do each position, knowing that with the news, like we're recording this on Tuesday night, but the main news being that Laird's likely to get up, which is a relief for me because I think it would have been a donut for me, that Sammy Walsh is out for 2-3, which is a trade in this format if you've got them. Ridley's out for 4-6, which is potentially the full season, a trade in this format if you've got them. So, and then there's those underperforming players from the top. So we'll just talk about what you do if you've got a few trades up your sleeve. Looking at the back line, it's crazy the numbers we're getting in the back line. So I know we said it last year, we're surprised that the big five defenders were all going 110 plus, putting up premium mid numbers. Looking at this, unless I've got my numbers wrong, defense, Dacos last five, 130, Sicily 134, Dawson 124, Tom Stewart 128, Houston 137, Luke Ryan 124. So if you've got those six defenders, those last 5 weeks, have I made a mistake there?
No, that's right, yeah. No.
So last 5 weeks, if you've got those six defenders, you're getting 124 minimum from your defenders. It's crazy. Average between those six is 130. Last five.
Yeah. Six of the top 10 scorers over the last five rounds have come from defense. So there's definitely been a changing of the guard in terms of where those points come from. I think, you know, it's just, I guess, a reflection of the way the footy's being played. Sort of looking at the Bombers, you know, when a team shuts down the corridor, teams are forced to kick around the back, try and switch. And if the team's shutting it down effectively, you just see the points just skyrocket. You look at the Bombers from the weekend, I think six of their top seven scorers were all defenders. So the whole back six just had a mountain of the footy. And you sort of look at those players that are scoring so well, They're the ones that are the real key drivers for those teams. They're earmarked to do it week in, week out, and the points are just coming fighting. So I think in terms of, you know, and we'll talk about some learnings, I guess, moving forward into next year. Obviously, they're going to be very expensive, but that's where the game's won and lost. I suppose if you're, you know, taking someone that's only going to average 100, sort of like Ridley did at the first half of the year, that's going to really cost you because you've given up, you know, sometimes it's going to be 20 points per week. And the differences in the midfield isn't quite that great, which is, you know, it's definitely a change in the way this game is played, but also the way footy's played.
No, I like it for the game. I remember, especially with DPPs in, like, essentially you, and more so fancy, where you get less points for intercepts, rebounds, all those metres gained, which you'll get with a defender, it spoils in Supercoach. But all I ever wanted was centre bounce, midfielders, and if you can get them in the back line, perfect, get them in the forward line, non-negotiable, midfield, whereas now you're almost wanting players who play in the back line. Like we've seen all year, Jack Sinclair, he scores better when his CBAs are down, 27% on the weekend, 132. So outside of those top six, we mentioned those last five averages, you got on the weekend, Doherty 156, Sinclair 132, Shees a 126, Ridley 138, those other Bomber boys, as you said, but these guys are all still very highly owned. It's going to be very interesting next year. We'll touch on in the end how you attack that. Do you pay this top dollar for these guys? Try to find the next branch. Poor old Ridley, you mentioned him at the start of the year. That's now three. He's done well, I've got to say, and he's made cash, and I think I went as Zeeble to him, which, again, at the end of the year, we'll more so talk about learnings and key trades. That was a key trade for me, doing Zeeble. I think he was even 600K to Ridley at 400K before then. So I'll cop the what did Ridley get? Oh, he's done a knee, subbed out, and a quad, not subbed out, but finished the game early out for the rest of the year, and then a concussion early year. So that's three bullets, but I still love him. I always message you something about him. I just love Jordan Ridley as a player. But so if you are an owner of Ridley, or if you're like, it's all good and well saying these big scores, Bailey Dale, who I know, well, there's 5% of the top 1,000 have him. His last three averages 76, 89 last five. Caleb Daniel, 86 last three, 88 last five, which, as you said, that's putting up 40 points, giving up 40 points to those top dogs. Do you pull the trigger and try to get one of those big six, or are you confident that a Daniel, Dale, Will Day could put up an okay score of 105?
Confidence is a strange word. I think, like, I was confident that especially someone like Helmut would go on with what he was doing, given that he was getting high CBA numbers. I think they've come down a little bit. But it's really hard to say that, like, we know they're not going to match those elite defenders. I suppose it's obviously how many trades you've got. Like, there is coaches out there with four, and I think in those sort of circumstances, now is 100% the time that you should be trying to get off one of those lower performing players, especially, like, I think if it's an antipod. So, like, Dale's obviously not highly owned, Daniel's not highly owned. They're the players that are going to hurt you week in, week out. Like, it's almost fine to run around with a Sheezel or a Will Day, who are in a lot more teams, because it doesn't hurt you as much. But when you're in those players that you know, you're sort of all out on an island on, getting up to someone that's going to, you know, put 20, 25, 30 points a week on their head, it's definitely worth doing. If you've got the cash and you've got two trades, for sure, I think it's time to, you know, pull the trigger on a luxury. And I think if you've got more than that, nothing should be stopping you. I think last week we said the Briggs to Gorn moves is a really good one and something to grab points. So I think, you know, a lot of the people that are listening to us have probably already done that. But if you haven't, I think there's no point hanging on to those trades. I think one's plenty on the run home if you've got some decent rookie cover. There are some teams out there that don't have any, and it's kind of a week-to-week proposition. That would probably change my thinking a little bit. But if you've got some decent rookies on the bench like I do, and you've got two or three trades, and you can get up to someone that's going to put 30 points on the head of someone that you're carrying week in, week out, definitely be pulling the trigger at this point.
Yeah, so Bailey Dale, he was a great pick at the time, mid-season, cheap as chips. And again, time again, I'd still do it. But where he was struggling first half of the year, they had so many mouths to feed. They had a Crozier playing back there at the start of the year, Jason Johannesson, Ed Richards, who was having a breakout season, and himself, so he had to share the load. That mid-season period, Johannesson did his hammy. Ed Richards, I think, did a hammy. Crozier was out playing twos, injured as well, and it was just his for gold, and he was taking all the kick-ins, running off, everything was going through him. Watching him, he's still very good when he gets the ball, but it's not always through him, so unlike those other names we mentioned, those top six, and then even those below that, Doherty, Sinclair, where things run through them, I'd definitely be wanting to jump off. If I was a Ridley owner, obviously this time of the year, you just want to go to the best possible, and we'll rank them when we do the insights. The ones who don't scream off the page looking at their last couple of averages are Will Day with a 105 last five, 96 season average, and a Sheasel 98 last three, 95 last five. Sheasel one as West Coast this week. Two, his averages without Zeeble and Aaron Hall in the field are great. The only time he had a downer was when Zeeble got subbed on early, and then Geelong at Geelong got thrown forward and was a bit of a disaster. But was watching him to the eye, he's an absolute gun. He doesn't just get the easy footy. He tackles well. He reads a play well. Takes every kick in. So I have confidence holding him. And then Will Day, well, I think he's going to be a level below those top ones. St Kilda do give up plenty of points, so the hope is that he'll bounce back a little bit this week. The midfield is where it's getting a bit trickier to find who those top eight are. I know most teams are complete in the midfield. Those with a Sam Walsh will be looking to potentially make a trade. We mentioned him off the top, Jack Steele. If you can get across to him, 135 last three, looking back to his best. The other cheap ones, Callum Mills, who, despite his good score last week, the 107, 3% set of bounces, played off a wing, was said to be a bit beaten up. He just didn't look good, to be honest with you. Got two mark kick goals in the game, which isn't a Mills sort of style, and outside of those, he might have scored an 80-odd, so wasn't big on him. Tuke Miller, the other one, who is appealing at his price, but 46% centre bounces. He got the hit with Flanders getting the increase. So again, he's cheap, but I don't love him to compete with the top ones. The one who can certainly compete with the top ones is Luke Davies, Uniacke, who, as mentioned with Sheasel, has that West Coast matchup this week. 133 last game, 132 his last three. He's just got that perfect, I think he had 12 clearances, 600 metres gain. He just has a perfect recipe for Supercoach scoring, where even I think fantasy scored a 104 but a 133 Supercoach. So you know that hopefully his floor is always going to be low because because he's got the perfect Supercoach game. The only risk is the tag risk every week given how good he is, but knowing how bad Roos are, hopefully he doesn't get the tag. And I think he'd be my number one choice as a trade-in target if you already own all those top ones for that price, just over Steele. How do you sit on those two?
Yeah, I do. I think I'll do you. I was just having a look at his numbers there, and I think the price is probably going to be the most prohibitive, and that's an absolute credit to LDU that he's been able to shoot that up, because not too long ago he was very cheap. So he's put some massive scores on the board, and it's all coming off. Obviously, he missed that round seven game. I think that was an Achilles, I think. From memory, he came back, he had a poor score, and then basically since then he's just gone bang, 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 with the lowest score of 94 and some really high ceiling games all over 120. So if you can get up to LDU, I really like him as an option. He's got, you know, decent matchups coming up. There's a hard one with Melbourne next week, but they don't tag, which is really the only concern I'd have with LDU, and I can't really see some tags coming in his future unless someone goes with, a team decides to tag when they don't usually. So Essendon might stick someone next to him, but at the same time, we don't run hard tag. So I think he's a really good option. And then obviously Steele is in a pretty affordable price bracket. I think at this time of year, you don't really want to be jumping on someone like a Mills if you can avoid it. And those players that have shown to be pretty inconsistent, where the role's not 100% set or you know, they're not going to be producing those 120 pluses. I'd rather jump on someone that has the potential to go really high and consistently towards the end of the year with, rather than someone, you know, that's not going to be doesn't have the high ceiling, because you're going for season defining picks with these last five rounds. And I think, you know, playing it safe in known quantities isn't always going to be the best option. You want to jump on those with really high ceilings, and, you know, LDU presents that. Jack Steele certainly presents that. Both come with a little bit of risk, but if it turns out how you'd hope it would, they're going to help you climb up the ranks where the other ones might not.
Yeah, and LDU, what, 6% of the top 1,000, 4 of the top 100 is a unique. I don't think West Coast, they should tag him because it's a winnable game and he's clearly their best player, but I'm not sure how much they want to win this winnable game this week. Just a quick watch on Melbourne. I think James Jordan did a little bit of running with Dawson the other day, and I actually haven't watched enough footy the last 2 weeks, but just looking at the possession numbers of the midfield of Adelaide last week and then the week before with Lachie Neale having that down game against Melbourne too. Again, no hard tag, but when you've got Jack Viney bashing, crashing and running through the footy, it is hard to win the ball like you would on any ordinary week. But I still have him above Steele. Say if you're a team, because I'm actually surprised how highly owned Walsh is, 26% of the top 1,000, 17 of the top 100. And I think if you had got that 200, you might have seen those numbers even higher, teams coming in from outside those ranks. 535K he is, which means you're going to need 20-odd K to get to Steele and more to get to LDU. So say you've got no cash, would you use two trades to get up to a top one, or would you settle on someone around that price or cheaper, which is your Josh Kelly, Tuke Miller, Callum Mills?
Then, I think I would be settling, to be honest. I don't think it's worth the extra trade. It's not worth two trades because, like, I think when we talk about, you know, doing a luxury upgrade, if you've only got one, you know, we're sort of talking about, you know, that trade, you know, in a best case scenario might get you 20 to 30 points per game that could be quickly eclipsed. And when you're sort of talking about a player like Steele, LDU, and the players that are below Walsh, like you mentioned, I don't think they're going to, you know, they're not going to be putting, you know, 20 to 30. It's probably going to be in the 10 to 20 range, which is not worth a trade at this point, in my view. You know, if you think it is, if someone does think it is, I think, you know, you always trust your instincts. But for me, it's not something I would do. I'd sort of look at that underpriced player that potentially has the ability to score big. And for me, I think that would be Tuke. We've seen with their new coach, this, he's gone back to playing people in their right positions. Tuke wasn't all that bad on the weekend. And I think it's probably going to, you know, coming off a knee injury, and how bad it was, it's going to take him a little bit to get into the swing of things. So he had an 80% time on ground on the weekend, just the 18 possessions and four tackles, and he still scored an 81. So I think, you know, I'd back that in to increase and him to score more rather than using the two trades.
Yeah, definitely no two trades, and also hunting the bargain. We've said it all year, even happened last year too, those who went the bargain in merit mid-year over Parrish were rewarded, and even this year, those ones who were value have ended up outperforming those more expensive ones. And looking at it, like Tuke Miller 120 last year, Callum Mills 117 last year. So I'm with you. I've got Miller above Mills, but they're both fine options if that's all the cash you can do. What about knowing those points which we're seeing in the back line, like the top eight, or even just say the top six mids last five are averaging about a 120 combined, and it's 130 in the defence. Would you consider trading in someone like a Doherty over a LDU, similar price, or and over a Jack Steele for the potential upside points, but more so like you worked out last pod, trading in that extra defender, meaning that you've got extra cover in defence if you're lacking cover in the back line?
Yeah, definitely. I think I would. Obviously, over an LDU, they're going to have to be a very high performer. I think if you're going to be bringing anyone in from the back, I would rather take the risk on someone like a Tuke over a defender, like when you sort by highest price below Jack Sinclair. So he's 547. I don't like any of the options below him. But obviously, the DPP flexibility that it would give you bringing in a defender to have that swing, throw the extra defender back if you get a defensive injury, especially like if you've got someone like a rookie in your back line that can come into your midfield and then you can use your midfield or forward cover through DPP. I think that's definitely a really good move. It's one that I did last week. It's not one that I actually meant, but that's opened up a whole heap of flexibility. And I think it's probably, it's worth almost taking a little haircut on points in terms of what you see as the upper ceiling for that player. So like obviously Sinclair's averaging less than what LDU is, but someone like that, that gives you a little bit of flexibility is probably going to be worth it.
Now, where it's interesting is the ruck, which we spoke at length about last week after Gawn's 120. So 200 it was, sorry. Backed it up with a 120 versus Riley O'Brien. And we keep talking that juicy matchup versus Sydney last round of the year, who give up plenty to rucks. There was talk post-game, Rowan Marshall, who's obviously the most popular owned, or one of the most popular owned rucks in the game. He's actually the most. Up the top. English is only owned by 80% of the top 1,000. Marshall's 88%. Apparently had a fitness test and they expected not to play. He expected not to play, or Tom Campbell expected to play. He was an emergency and past that, spent a bit of time forward late. So obviously there's that risk every week from here. I know they have to win and he's playing well, so they'd be mad to rest him. Rob Marshall, that's certainly playing on mine. So in terms of rolling lockout and if you can do work out if he's playing or not and follow the news and potentially plug Cameron if you've got him on the bench. But does that news coming out about Rowan Marshall give you any more thought about trading him to a max score? Now, obviously, it's a 50K difference between prices, whereas a straight swap last week.
I could still do it if Rowan Marshall was going to be out. Do we know what the actual injury is? All the reports I've seen was just he faced the injury test. But
banged
nothing.
Up. I think just banged up. Is the
just banged up. I guess, yeah. Like if he was to miss, I think it would definitely be tempting at this point, just given the fact that he was rested, or almost going to be rested. But look, they've got must win games. If he's named, it's not something I would do. I do have concern that if he's banged up, he could play forward more, and then they bring in a Tommy Campbell. I'm surprised they probably didn't do that, given that he must have been so touch and go. And he actually did some really good work around the ground and forward of centre with his marking and some contested marks as well. He only kicked the one goal one, but I think he was getting into a lot of really good opportunities and providing a really good contest, which St Kilda have been missing a fair bit of late, given their forward stocks are down. So that's also a concern. For me, it's still not something that I would pull the trigger unless we had confirmation, one, he was going to play forward or two, miss. But I think almost a one-weeker to Rowan Marshall, it would be very tempting for me to pull the trigger on Gawn. I'd definitely have to sleep on it. But I think that sort of, because it would, if it's not confirmed ahead of time, it'd be a donut for me. And I think a donut is a trade at this point. It's just when you've got rookie cover that's you know, semi-decent, that it's not worth a trade at this point. But I'd certainly pull the trigger on a donut at this point.
Yeah, no, good point. And there's four coaches in the top 100, 5% in the top 1,000, with Gawn, 89 and 88%. Rowan Marshall, as I say, if there's 88, get a donut and you can have a Gawn and get yourself the extra 120 points minimum potentially. It's a great way to fly up. So mentioned last week I'd be tempted, but Marshall actually outscored him last week by 4 points. So while Marshall's still doing what he's doing, and obviously you never think about doing that with Tim English, it's hard to pull the trigger, but certainly follow the news and even selection. I think it helps that Max King sounds like he's only a couple of weeks away. Caminiti played better up forward last week and they need to win, the Saints, so Ross will be doing all he can to play.
I think Reeves is out this week as well for Hawthorn, which obviously makes him have a bit more of a favourable matchup. I think he'll come up against Meek. So in terms of that hit-out disparity that we would probably expect from a matchup against Meek, it's probably not going to be there. So if he's right to go, I definitely wouldn't. But given that St Kilda and most teams aren't great with their injury reporting these days, we might not know about it until too late, given they play on the Sunday.
So that leaves us with a forward line. You mentioned off the top, Errol was your poorest score with 66. He tried hard. So listen to the press conference with Horse. Millsy was banged up, so they put him on a wing to have him a bit more of a softer role and essentially swap Mills' role with Gordon. Gordon spent the whole time inside, 77% centre bounces. He tried hard. He just gave away some free kicks, missed some targets, and obviously the game was over pretty early and those points didn't come in. I think he got near the 100 mark in fantasy, so nothing to worry about there. The interesting point, though, was Dunkley returned back to his, what we know of Dunkley, 115, and coaches did trade him out around the top 80%. He is in now the top 1,000, whereas I think that was close to 100% before the injury, so he might be a nice pod, or not pod, but a nice play for those who held. Where things get interesting, though, we've got the obvious top six, or in my opinion, the obvious top six and popular top six of a Dunkley, Gould and Rosie, Butters, Taranto, albeit he's down on form, 98 in his last five, and Cogs. We had a couple of names pop their head up last week. Two of them we've been crying out for, being a Darcy Cameron, who was in poor form before his week off, and I think he had 20 hit out to advantage for his 135. And was great in the ruck with big ruck times. That rest week off might have done him the world of good, and hopefully he comes home strong for owners. I know we're both owners, and I dare say a lot of our listeners are, because I was pretty big on getting him as that cover for R3 potentially and F6. Himmelberg repaid the faith for owners with his 109, but nothing's changed. He's playing that same role he has done for the last 5 weeks, where he's averaging 87. So it's not like I'd be trading him in if you've got that forced trade with an injury or sitting on someone you don't like. It's Sam Flanders who did it again, 69% centre bounces. That bumped up again, 113 he scored, 111 now last five, last three, 1% of the top 1,000, 4 of the top 100. Again, those who started the season with him, vindication there. I believe you did, Tommy. What was Stewie Dew thinking there? Can he compete? Can he keep the 105, 110 average? Because looking at the forwards, we've talked about the defenders averaging 130, their top six. Midfielders 120. The rucks, including Gorn and English, last five are averaging 130. It's the forwards who are letting us down a bit. Their last five are averaging a 110 mark. We say letting us down, it's still pretty nice scoring. Do you think Flanders can average that 110 mark, which you kind of need to be a top six forward? Or would you persist with, if you've still got trades left, someone like a Ben Keys, a Nick Martin, a Jack McRae, who's just going?
It's a really tough one, because if Flanders' role holds, I think the scoring is going to continue. The competition there is really from Took Miller. So he had 64 CBAs the week before, and Flanders had 50. This week it was 46 to Took, and then 69 to Flanders. The other players are relatively consistent in their CBA attendance. So I think that's the concern that I would have, that Flanders is going to get pushed out and Took comes in for the run home. But if it is going to hold, and all indications point to it is, because he is such a really talented footballer, and I think they need to show that faith in him, that what his role is going to be, otherwise he might leave. And I think that's definitely a concern for the head honchos up there. So I think he's probably, that best option. You were definitely singing his praises last week. And I think when you're sort of looking at the underperforming players, I can't really see someone, capable of going 110 in comparison to what Flanders can do if the role holds. So, yeah, I think he is probably the better option. And when you look at sort of those underperformers that aren't really highly owned, he's probably the best option. Do I think it's worth a trade if you've only got, two? Probably not. I think there's probably better options in other positions, unless you're sitting on someone that's, potentially going to average 80. 90 into the 80s. Which you're not going to get, because, that's what, 10 to 15 points per game. It's probably not worth a trade for me, but I think if you were going to pull one, Flanders is the go.
Yeah, I agree. I still like the top six above him, but the fact they got smashed is probably underscored. I think he had 9 clearances and 6 at quarter time, and yeah, looked great. Probably deserved even more than his 113. If there had been a win, I think we would have seen that. That then leads us, Tommy, to, or firstly, obviously not barring teams being friendly, and even say if they're not friendly and Laird's not named again, you're not going to use your trade. You're going to hold it for up to 3 weeks to go, just to confirm what you said earlier.
Yeah, I am. Like, Laird's probably the only one that, I guess Marshall as well, but Laird's the only one that sort of got an injury significant cloud over him. And if he's a test for this week, you're pretty confident that he's going to play the week after. And I think that's, you know, not a trade. If I knew he was going to, if he misses and I knew he was going to miss two last week, maybe I would have pulled the trigger. But the fact that, you know, we don't consider last week, those points are already gone. It's a 1 week injury from here if he misses, and that's not worth a trade for me. So I think that philosophy still holds.
So then that then leads us to Captain Vice. Captain, you're in a bit of form. Actually, you're VCC for the last probably post buy that you've been getting it done. Where are you currently leaning?
Yeah, so the C is definitely going to be on Sicily this week coming up against St Kilda. I think that matchup is just way too friendly. There's obviously the risk that they might tag him given the influence he has back there or play some sort of cooler role. But I think he's the obvious choice. Last week was a bit of an unexpected one for him. And I think he gets a mulligan there. And the scoring outside of that game over the last like five or six is just massive. So as a backup, I'll be chucking the C on Sicily and then probably looking towards Nicky Dacos. I'm not really loving all the options. Obviously, the Western Bulldogs boys are always in contention, but Bond really hasn't set the world on fire. He's really consistently putting up a score that you would take, but it's not the highest score of the round. So it's been, you know, 4 weeks since he's gone above 130, which is kind of on the cusp, really, of what you're really happy with. You take it for sure, but it's not something to write home about. And then obviously we've got English against Briggsy, who's definitely tempting, but I think I'll go the Dacos on Friday night footy.
Yeah, I think Dacos will be popular. I don't think Carlton will tag, even though Georgie Hewitt's back in the midfield. He might start on him if it's stoppages, but one's pretty quick and one's not quick. So I think Dacos will be fine. Just looking across at the weekend's matchups, I imagine Willem Drew will tag Jordan Dawson following last week. That'd be mad, St Kilda. I know they give up a huge amount of scores and points to defenders, but that'd be mad not to do something with Sicily. What helps Sicily is that he actually went and took the best forward, being Rewalt last week, and you can't tag him there. So he might go and line up on a, whether it's a Caminiti or a key forward for the Saints, and make it hard for someone to actually tag him. But he was the one who killed the Saints. I think that was the day when you were tossing up between a Sinclair and a Sicily mid-season, and Sinclair got a 60 or 70-odd, and Sicily, every time we turned the screen on, had the footy. I think he had 40-odd possessions. So I think Ross would be mad not to tag him with some description, but I'm not an owner, so you've all had that 170, which I was happy for you. Now I could let him go back to his 95.
Yeah, don't put that juju on me. That's not fair.
I'm now thinking for mine. Could be a Dunkley option. Backup cat. I'll be a Nick Dacos VC and potentially a Dunkley because I think he avoids any attention. Q clash. Suns are out of form. That's probably where I will land it. But, yeah, relying heavily on a Nick Dacos good one because you're right. Last week it felt like we had a heap of good options, and the week before, a heap of good options. This week's looking a bit thin. Just before we finish, did mention a couple of learnings this year. I know last year the big learning for a lot of super coaches with those extra trades was to take more of a punt on a, whether it's a mid-price or value pick, rather than that certain top of their line, which was a bit of the old school mentality. And obviously if you could get someone who's both of those, which we saw last year with a Sicily and a Hewitt and a Will Brody and those types, then you obviously hit the jackpot. Which meant that this year teams were a lot more open to taking that mid-pricer, whether it was a Flanders or a Bruin, and then they all backfired. So have you got just a few off the top of your head learnings from this year, what you've done, which you look to put in place for next year?
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing that I guess looking at the last 2 years, obviously last year was a really poor year for me. And this year I'm right up the pointy end. I'm sitting 200th. But I went back and sort of looked at my ranks from last year, how I started in comparison to this year, and they were, you know, very similar. So last year I started in 51,000th, and then I was 28,000th the week after, and then looking at this year, 31,000, and 23,000 the week after. But in week three, I was 30,000 this year. So looking at both years, I started really similarly in terms of, you know, the starting team wasn't right. And then looking back at last year, I know one thing that I did was held a lot of faith in those players that I started. I was probably a little bit stuck in the old mentality of having those, you know, even more limited trades, which meant I was a bit resistant to be really aggressive off the bat, fix the issues that I sort of thought were in my team but wasn't certain. And I sort of went the conservative route, certainly too conservative, and it took a long time to bounce back. But then looking at this year, I gave my team a week. And then following that, I went three trades, one trade, two trades, and just started trading off the back to fix the issues in my team. And then looking back at my trade history, not all of them worked out, but when looking at the players that I did move on, it was very much justified, and the players that I brought in were the ones that had gotten off to a hot start, were really underpriced, and that sort of kickstarted that cash gen that I needed to sort of continue that trading throughout the season, where the cash ran out the year before. So not so much. I think it just like consolidated what I came into this year thinking, which is that, you know, we've got these extra trades and you've got to really use them at the start rather on the back end, which I did last year, to get your team right. Obviously, the most important thing in this game is the starting team, getting the starting team right. But, you know, two, three players that aren't right are going to really hamper you through the rest of the season, and being really aggressive to make those moves. And when you see that not working out, that's what the trades are for. So one that really consolidates, you know, what I was thinking. And I guess the other thing is, look, I had a lot of mid prices that didn't work out last year, and I had a lot that didn't work out this year as well. We were speaking about a Flanders earlier. There was a Bruin, a Callahan, who I brought in early, but got out of really quickly just because they weren't working out. And I think, you know, getting those picks right is really important. But when you get them wrong, or you think you got them wrong, it's better to get out of them onto someone that's a little bit more safe than just running them through. So for me, that's probably the biggest thing. You know, obviously, hopefully I'll get my starting team right next year. But if I don't, and I've got a similar holes, it's just been about really aggressive to fix them up, because the cash gen that, you know, those players that we sort of rely on, the premiums are the premiums, you hold those, the rookies are the rookies, you hold those. It's those mid prices that sort of set you apart. You've got to get them right. And if you get them wrong, make sure you fix them.
Yeah, 100%. And just back in your gut with those trades, and it's easy for me to say, because 2 years in a row I've run out of trades. It's probably going to hurt me in the back end again this year, but I think that's the best way to succeed. Make your own luck and get on those right players who are going to make the cash. Obviously, old school is rookies make the cash, premiums get your score, but if you can get someone who can make you cash and score, like we had Zeeble early in the year, Will Setterfield did for a little bit, they obviously tick all boxes, and then the targeting value again works. So whether it was a Zeret mid-season who didn't have the great start of the year, and then he's come home flying. Bailey Dale didn't really pay off for me, but he's been okay. Jordan Ridley, that move went well. Jack Steele got him in cheap. So still sticking with that mantra. But my biggest learning, I've just got to work out how I can execute it best next year again, is this 23rd man, which I'm now a believer in this modern super coach with so many injuries and resting extra week of the season. I agree with you, and it hurt me that 1 week when I had to pick between Cheezel and Day got the big score on the bench, and you always say it, you almost have to take the 105, and then the other player who you bench might go 140 or vice versa, so you never want those extra decisions on your hand. But I haven't had to make that decision since, because we've had forced move after forced move. So I think there's merit in that 23rd man, and I think by targeting value and getting those right mid prices to generate the cash, you'll have the cash to do so. So obviously a lot more of that will be shared at the post-season wrap when we do that. But just thought those who are kind of checking out on Supercoach, if they're out of their trades and putting their feet up, just touch on a few things while you're still in tune. But apart from that, Tommy, I promise you a short one. It's not super short, but good luck this week, and we'll touch you next week when we're in the last month. Thank you.